News deckt auf. Der Podcast zum Magazin mit spannenden Einblicken in den Alltag der Redaktion und hörenswerten Interviews mit Menschen, die bewegen. Erfahren Sie mit uns die Geschichten hinter den Geschichten.
Liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer, willkommen beim Newscast. Mein Name ist Susanne Zobel, ich bin Kulturredakteurin bei News und ich begrüße heute einen ganz besonderen Gast, den Star-Pianisten Lang Lang. Wir werden über sein neues Album sprechen, das er dem französischen Komponisten Camille Saint-Saëns gewidmet hat. Es ist bei der Deutschen Grammophon erschienen. Und über Frauen am Dirigentenpult. Wir führen das Gespräch auf Englisch. Viel Freude beim Zuhören. It's your album that brought us together with French music. Yes. How did you come across this very rare piece, the second piano concerto of Camille Saint-Saëns?
Yes, I always love this concerto. I've been a huge fan of this piece since when I was a teenager. I still remember my first time listening to Freeman Bronkman played in Philadelphia. When I was studying there with the orchestra, Philadelphia Orchestra, and I was like, what is this piece? It's so incredible. Why I didn't know about it. And of course, I also watched Arthur Rubinstein's legendary concerto. It's actually LD that time. Laser disc, and when he was 90 years old, played this concerto, and I was like, one day I have to record. And I've been always thinking to do a French album, everything French, but it is a challenge because there are a lot of the French repertoire is kind of impressionist work. And to put it together in one album, sometimes it's a slightly difficult because everything is kind of a blurry and a little bit abstract. And then until I decided to do with the Saint-Saëns Concerto No. 2 and the Carnival of Animals with my wife Gina, and then we find this great balance with more romantic virtuosic French repertoire and the more dreaming, blurry, impressionist Debussy, Ravel, and five female composers, which we rediscover of their incredible work from the last century, but obviously, I think the concerto number 2 is a real great masterpiece, and I had a great privilege to work with Vienna Philharmonic last year. We played in the Musikverein for 3 concerts, the funny thing was, they told me the last time before I played, it was 1968. For almost 60 years, nobody was playing this piece.
So you inspired them to play this piece, but in a way it's very innovative because it starts with the
Bach, kind of like a baroque,
right?
Organ. Yeah, he was an organ master.
Yeah. Before that, you recorded the Goldberg Variations, which I love immensely in your interpretation.
Thank you.
And is there also a connection between this Bach piece and that brought you to Camille Saint-Saëns?
Even though there are some connections from the Baroque kind of harmonies to Saint-Saëns concerto, but it's not because of the Goldberg. A Goldberg Variation was basically a kind of the ultimate project. And this one is something new. I never done French album in the past, so I thought it's a time to do something with the romantic French and the impressionist French. So in a way, I actually had a little bit of a similar decisions when I record my Chinese album, which is long time ago in 2006, was called the Dragon Songs. It's the same thing that in Chinese music, there are a lot of dreaming five tone music, but there are also some more what you call the virtuosic romantic style. And I try to kind of combine those works together. And for me, finding the right combination for French repertoire is similar. You have to look into the bigger historic repertoires rather than just looking into one period of work. This will be a very different project if you do like Chopin, for example. You just make old Chopin, and then this, and his life was not that long, so it was almost the same time. But that works, yeah. But for the French repertoire, I think you have to look into the bigger historic period.
This was one thing I wanted to ask you, because when I listened to it very closely, I thought there must be some further connections between, I think you also write it in the liner notes, that there must be some connections between Chinese music and this very impressionistic French.
Yes. So the thing was, during the French period, the French impressionist period, Debussy, he always wanted to approach something else, kind of break through the European classic tradition or romantic tradition. He wanted to create something completely new. Same with Ravel. Ravel, in his music, you already hear a bit kind of early jazz. So in a way, both composers who were the biggest the influence person for the impressionists, Debussy and then Ravel, they always wanted to learn something or inspire something from the Orient. So whether it's from Indonesia, a little island, or a pagoda somewhere in Asia, whether it's from China or from Japan, they always wanted to have some kind of Orient feelings. And like you hear a lot of kind of a melody which is connected kind of like to temple, for example, or pagoda, as I said before, or like the old Orient paintings, you know, watercolor painting. Even if you look into Monet, his painting, you see there's some kind of Orient colors. So I think that's also influenced the other Claude, which is Claude Debussy. And I think that's kind of interesting. That, and I think that was also kind of the trend during that time. Mahler also had some kind of Chinese poetry from Tang Dynasty, from Li Bai. Puccini also. So in a way, kind of Orient in the 20th century seems like in the 19th century, it became kind of a trendy inspirational region in the world, seems like.
Is this an example, or should we take an example, how music can bring people from all over the world together then?
Yeah, I think that particularly I think in this type of music, you see there are a lot of fusion, and you see there are a lot of spirit between East and West, and this became more what you call global in a way. And today, I think it's even more global. If you look into the how classical music is received in Asia or elsewhere, non-European traditional classical music country, is a quite active market in a way that people look into classical music, and certainly that reached very much in a global level, classical music. Yeah.
You're playing a very important role in this bringing the world together, in the musical world together. You have your schools in China, I think, and in the United States.
Yes. Well, we have already 200 schools in the world, which we are sponsoring under a program called Keys of Inspiration. And this is a regular music class and part of the curriculum of the school. So we're bringing music back to the public, or you call the state schools, which they didn't have music class before. And the idea is to bring, which we are doing from this 200 schools, is that we have 20 to 30 smart pianos in each of the classroom, and with a very interesting AI software. Of course, you have to have a real music teacher to teach them how to use it and how to make it work. But the good thing is that every kid we are now training, they have the ability to play the instrument themselves, not just listening to what people telling them to do, enjoy a piece, which they are also doing, but they are actually learning how to play it on the keyboard. And this is quite special because we are very kind of a piano-oriented music class. They can also compose and to sing, but they have to learn piano first. So each of them can play several pieces already.
And how does this work? Does everybody has its is it, you say you have one smart piano?
Everybody has one piano in front of them, because in each class we have 20 to 30 instruments. Yeah, so every kid is sitting there, not on the table, but in front of the piano. So that's how they take lessons.
You once told me that you have a sort of an education where the piano can record and repeat what the student just played. Are they all like that, or just normal pianos?
This is more what they call the digital smart pianos. So certainly this you can record everything you want, and then you can record everything you played or everybody else played. And then, yeah, this is a perfect way to do the music education, because you can memorize what you did through the programs. And then the other thing you're talking about, that's the stereo system for the professional pianos, like Steinway, for example. They have this stereo system, which now you can do a live concert anywhere in the world. And if you have a stereo piano, the piano can just live broadcast this pianist's live concert.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, so that's so in a way that I think for music education, this is perfect. Because when I made a first live concert like that, we had pianos all over the conservatories, like in London, in New York, in Paris. So it was it's a gigantic screen, and then the piano play itself, and they see me playing somewhere in Paris. Yeah, that was the idea.
Fantastic. Yeah. So are you using this for yourself too when you are practicing a piece and then?
Yeah, I sometimes does. Not all the time, because then every time I don't want to always have a like kind of replay all the time. But occasionally when I'm ready, I just do it. And then afterward, I just listen to the replay. And very interesting, because it's very precise. It's almost the same as what I did.
So AI is something, is a blessing in this way.
I mean, it's good for education in a way that you can learn from each other much easier than before. Yeah. But AI is not yet for compositions, classical music. AI is very good for pop music. You can do a lot of programming which fit the pop song very well. Or hip hop, it's perfect. But for classical music, AI haven't yet to replace the creative part. Yeah. So I hope we will still have a real compositions rather than AI compositions. I think it's important to keep the art creative, more genuine, more real. In the other hand, for music education, AI is great. It's a great tool, especially if you don't live in the big cities. Think about if you're from a little village in China or South America or in Africa. AI will help you tremendously, and you will have the equal education opportunities as the city, you know, big city students. And this gives everybody more chance to learn properly, learn music.
That sounds great, because all the time when I'm talking to some AI specialist, they tell me, you will see once they will replace the artists, once they will they can compose a symphony like Mozart. But I think whatever I heard in finishing,
they probably can have a similar thing, but I don't think it's basically still is duplicate. You know, you don't have you don't have a new Mozart. That's the thing. You know, maybe they can copy some of the motif what Mozart did. You know, and then they may get some kind of a keys back to what Mozart normally does, right? But the thing is that, what about the new Mozart? Right, I mean, then that's I think nobody can become like a new Mozart. That's a different level of intelligence, and I think I'm still quite positive. You know, as a classical musician, you know, I think there are a lot of things that you can't replace. But on the other hand, as I said, I'm very happy that AI is helping us for education, especially for general education.
How is it for you when somebody will tell you, okay, I will prove that AI can imitate human voices, can imitate human interpretations?
I mean, I think AI can. I think they can. You can basically now put in whoever's voice, and then they can, you know, make you sing, make you talk. You know, I mean, AI already can do that today. In any languages, you know, you can make me speaking Swahili. I think, I mean, AI can do that. I mean, the same voice.
It's scary.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but I mean, I know that I can't speak Swahili fluently. So,
what about your German? Your wife is German.
Yeah, my son speaks already very well German. Like he understands a lot of things in German. I think his German is exactly the same as his Chinese. Is that, you know, that level? So now I sometimes learn from him a little bit, but it's hard. It's hard to get to my son's level, because he's basically, you know, he started talking German when he was just born, and it's a different situation. And he's now speaking, he's starting to learn French. Yeah. So I think very soon he will speak like four languages. Yeah. But as a regular Europeans, you guys can speak four languages, right? I mean, that's the regular ones. Someone even speak like eight languages in Europe, like Daniel Barenboim, for example.
For instance, he's a genius in every way, yes. Yeah. And Now, coming back to your album, you mentioned it before that you have pieces from female composers. I appreciate that very much, of course, but had this been possible in that way a couple of years before, ago?
I think the thing is that it's so the music is always have always been there and it's great, but somehow, unfortunately, not many people was taking time to rediscover those great works, and now it's fantastic because the society knows how important are the women power these days. Which is very important. You know, people should realize it a long time ago, and then that reflects into every aspect in the society, including classical music. You see there, but I mean, even for classical music in the past, you see always great female violinists, pianists. I mean, that was never the case. But now the composition world has been a big boost for the female composers, whether from today or the past. And honestly, I find those great works equally as good as, you know, the male composer at that time. If you hear Charlotte Sohi or this the Tenre Fair, I mean, this is as good as Satie, as Fauré. It's really incredible works, and I really enjoy playing it in a concert as encore, it just brings another aspect from the human level. It's so soft, so sweet, and poetic. Women has normally more sensitive heart than male, and then in those works you hear this light spiritual feelings, and if you hear this romance piece from Charlotte Sohi, you don't need to go to Paris, but somehow you are in Paris already. In her work, yeah.
What about female conductors? I mean, there are so many discussions going on about the world, classical music being not fair to female conductors, always making the difference. Is it a difference for you if you're working or making music with a...
I actually work with already a few wonderful female conductors in the past, whether they're European, American, or Asian. There are a lot of female conductors. And I must say now the society kind of really have a real, what would you call it, a real improvement of the attitude toward the conductings. Yeah, that's actually compared to instrumental, there's a more challenging areas in the past. But now you see the Berlin Concert House Orchestra taking a great, wonderful female conductor. And then there are many of the American orchestras, European orchestras, Asian orchestras taking female conductors. And then you see if you see the newer generation, there are certainly much more female conductors willing to kind of giving their entire devotion to become a conductor. And I think the confidence is much more than, let's say, 20 years ago. Or, you know, if you see a female conductor today, I don't think you are having another eye on them. You know, I think that time has been passed.
Yeah. That's great to hear because, you know, recently there was a ranking on the BBC Music Magazine where they had the best conductors of all the times. And then an extra ranking with women, the best female conductors of all time.
Really?
I think this is strange because,
we are not sports. Yeah, we are, you know, and you will never, you know, you will never vote that for piano, for example. You know, I never see anybody's like voting piano. You have, oh, the boy, and then the girl. It was never, I mean, in any competition or in any concert, it was always, it was always equally presented. Yeah.
And how is it you when you're looking back on your old recordings and now you look on your recent recordings or when you're playing, has your feeling somehow changed when you go on stage after all those
Yeah, I
things?
Think I'm more relaxed these days musically that I think it's especially after the Goldberg variation. I would say this is a transition, I would say. Is that especially for slower pieces, it's much more kind of for me easier to get in, and to not make such a big effort to do something, you know, because I think I'm more experienced with much more difficult complex pieces. And this is, for example, like tonight I will play the Schumann Kreisleriana, and it's great to switch, you know, these two personalities, and I kind of enjoy doing it much more. I think this the Goldberg really helped me to get to the what do you call it, the next level of performance or of analyzing the music, or especially for people like Brahms or Schumann or Beethoven, for example, it's much easier to understand their music after this Goldberg variation. Yeah.
Could you imagine to go back to the Goldberg variations in 30 years, for instance?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to do that. I think recently I will not go back to Goldberg. I played the last Goldberg recital 5 months ago, and I'm happy that I'm actually stopped a little bit and then now back to the romantic repertoire, a lot of Chopin and then I'm starting to play Rachmaninoff II this summer after 10 years I haven't played, or 8 or 9 years I haven't played. It's a great break. I need it. I think it's a time to do different style. And very interesting, you know, another thing is that I'm playing Ravel concerto in 2 weeks, and I'm really glad that I'm doing the Ravel with Maestro Tiedemann. He wanted the piece, and in the beginning I thought maybe that better is like for your last tour with Dresden as a music director. Maybe we do something like Mozart or Beethoven or something. He said, no, Ravel, let's try Ravel. So I haven't played Ravel, like this concerto I haven't played like in maybe 15 years. So I've now relearned this piece and I think it's really wonderful. I'm trying to find a lot of new things to be interpreted, to see, you know, especially I think the first movement, there are a lot of things I felt very different than before. Yeah.
But what about Ravel? I mean, Ravel was quite a thing in your life because when you were training...
But that's a different piece.
That's the other piece, for the left hand. Yeah, yeah. But nevertheless, it's the same composer, so it's the...
No, I love Ravel. That doesn't... I mean, it's not his mistake.
Thinking of those injuries anymore.
No, that's already long gone. I mean, I already forgot about it. Yeah.
It was before the pandemic,
before
your marriage.
So I now feel so great, and it was so good that I had a little time off and to really reflect my mind a little bit. It was 1 year. It was very short, so it's fine. The pandemic, I was a little bit worried, but fortunately, I didn't stop. So I, even though maybe only 50% of the hall during the pandemic, but I didn't stop, which gives me, you know, the drive, you know, to, and now also we're so appreciate, you know, to play concert. I think every one of us, you know, as a musician, that you now know how important is live concert. And when you're just continue play, sometimes you forget, you know, it's like, oh, another concert. No, every concert is great. It's a new world.
How is it? One thing I always was thinking about, when you're doing cadenzas with an orchestra and a conductor, yeah, and if something comes to your mind, you can do everything, nearly everything you want in the cadenza if you're playing your own. So
It's more flexible. But for example, if you do something with Beethoven already written, then you can't do much. Mozart, maybe you have a slightly more chance because he didn't write very complete cadenzas like Beethoven, for example. You can't do much actually in Beethoven cadenzas. It's already almost like another sonata. Yeah. You know? But Mozart, you can do a few things.
Instance, yeah. Yeah,
and you can, you know, change something during the concert. But it has to be kind of, it's like Bach, you know, Baroque. You have to be in the form. I wouldn't try something with Mozart like completely another kind of style, you know what I mean? I think this will be, I know sometimes people trying different things, they do like 20th century music into Mozart, but it's hard. It's hard. It still has to be a bit classical style, especially the ornamentation. You can't do much.
Great, yeah, to hear that. Yeah. How many concerts are you giving in a year now?
Now 90.
90?
Yeah.
Wow. So, and you're always traveling with your family? Or?
Yeah. So now. So either my wife or one of my family members. Yeah.
So, and you still have the joy to go on stage? Never feel
completely fresh. And as I said, pandemic changed even more, you know, of concept for performing. We appreciate, I mean, everybody I know that in the classical music appreciate live concert much more than before. Yeah, we love performing on stage. It's the nothing you can replace that. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
See you.